Test one, two.
To check that we are working here. This is an interview with Arthur Bartlett. He was general manager of the Co-op PDC from 1972 to 1980. Was it difficult taking over from Gordon Brown?
Not as difficult as people, Palmerston North people, might imagine, because coming to the city from Gisborne, a much smaller place, I had no idea of the status and mana that Gordon had in Palmerston North. And I didn't know anything about the co-op. It was a new challenge for me to take up commercial management from an accounting practice background. And of course he made me very welcome, and Gordon was like that. If he chose you, you were in a position of advantage for a start. And we got on really, I think, very well. He was an ideologue, of course, and some of my background was very much commercially oriented for a start, and I wasn't so much a true believer in the cooperative. But I became that way, and as time went on, I really felt it was doing something for the consumer. It had a genuine concern for the community, and I couldn't see. I thought it was really my role to continue that. I did it in my own way. There's never two people do this, a job the same way, and Gordon was too much the great white father of the city for me to try and emulate that. And I always respected him for it. We had our differences, but anybody who knew Gordon would know that you just didn't have an easy ride with him all the time. He had a huge personality, much more in spades, I think, than many people ever aspire to in their lifetime. He was one of those gifted fellows who could be so charming and yet such a tartar if he wanted to be. But I think, thinking back now, we respected each other. I was a heck of a lot younger than him, and that sometimes is a difficulty. But I think that in my way I tried to carry on the cooperative spirit of the Consumers Cooperative Society. And we did played our role in the community pretty well, I think.
1972 to 1986, did the store change much inside during that time?
Yes, we did a lot of capital expenditure during my term. We acquired properties, continued on the policy of acquiring property in the area and expanding the car parking. We had a devil of a job getting hold of the old club hotel, which we thought was pretty vital to our expansion program. And we changed the PDC to try and keep up with shopping trends. The only thing we really didn't change was our corner grocery stores, and we were locked into that. We had, and before I came, it had been a policy and a successful one of taking the stores to the people. And every suburb, every little satellite town had its co-op. And that's very much the English pattern. And it was the American pattern too, because they had a series of stores called A&P stores, which were corner drug stores. And the same fate befell them as befell us, in that the huge supermarkets came post-war and in America, and followed 20 years later here, where the people were virtually forced to go to the stores, which was a reversal of our pattern. Everybody had at least one car and many had two, and so instead of walking to the corner to get bread and milk, people drove to a parking precinct and shopped in a multifaceted way, and we were locked into our network of shops, and they just became very much convenience stores for the housewife who just wanted to fill in the shortfall from her main order each week. And that actually probably was just a cyclical thing where inevitably, if we unless
unless we moved to get rid of them very quickly and build large supermarkets, we were always going to be fall at the feet of our competitors, and that's what we did.
So you couldn't get rid of these suburban shops?
Well, of course, when Food Town gestured towards Palmerston North, we knew then that the writing was on the wall. And we joined Foodstuffs, who were a group, a loosely knit group of owner-operator stores, but mainly a bit bigger than we had, in an endeavour to get the cover, if you like, of a major distributor. But that was only a part-time solution to the problem. And apart from building a big supermarket attached to the PDC, we had made no real efforts to try and be another Pack and Save or another Food Town. And so Food Town really spelt the end of the era of the small corner store. And so we did sell them, and we sold them reasonably readily to people whose requirements weren't like ours, who didn't have to pay a rebate, who just needed to make wages. So there wasn't a problem really with selling them, but it did mean that they became individually owned stores which were going to be never any threat to the major chains. And we decided to polarise our activities on the central city. And so we sort of withdrew our tentacles, if you like, from the district, and just thought to ourselves that if we can provide one-stop shopping for our Palmerston North shareholders, district shareholders in the centre of the city, and in the biggest parking precinct that any medium-sized city has got, then we would fulfil our purpose. And so that's what we did.
Yeah, that worked quite well for a while. What happened in the end?
Well, part of the deal, part of the deal of getting Food Town to come onto our property was based on the theory that they would generate a huge amount of foot traffic. And it was perfectly logical if we said to them, look, you don't build where you think you're going to build. Build with us and build a big supermarket which will complement our housewares and our consumable stores that we sell from the department store, and we'll make it just a tremendous one-stop shopping complex. And we've got 500 parks to offer, and they literally jumped at it. But part of the deal was, and a reasonable request was, okay, we'll do that. We'll spend our $8 million or whatever it was, but you spruce your act up. You turn the department store into something better than it is, and what say we connect to each other through a plaza of shops, which would provide the ultimate in choice and selection and range for the community. And that was good.
What year was that?
Well, we started on that exercise about 1984, and It was a viable thing, because in those days when we did our first costings, interest rates were about 12%. And so we launched into the deal. We had it designed. We sold space in the shops, and it all looked perfectly logical and financially supportive. And then, unfortunately for the co-op, the government removed the interest controls, and in the boom leading up to 86 and 87, interest rates went through the roof. And instead of us being able to borrow at 12%, we had to borrow at 24%. And as we were borrowing probably something like $7 million to finish what we started, what we'd made a commitment to do, we found ourselves with an extra overhead of 0.8 million. And it just couldn't be sustained from the turnover that was generated. So we finished up with a lovely shopping plaza, a tremendous asset, but we couldn't sustain the liability that we had incurred wittingly, but rents that we had to pay. And so the upshot of it was we either had to sell it or we had to trade our way out. And I think that given a slight change in the attitudes from the people that lent us the money, we'd still be there. These days, the trend is to try and work things out between borrower and lender rather than have receiverships and liquidations. The attitude of people now is perhaps to say, all right, let's put a moratorium on the interest rates and let's see if you can't trade your way into the clear, and then we'll talk about a deal.
I suspect people weren't quite so used to receiverships.
No, they weren't. And I'm not blaming them for taking the action that they have. Our lenders ended up to be Trust Bank, and they did the right thing for themselves, and that's fine. But we were just caught in a chain of events which we couldn't have predicted. And as we built the plaza, and as it got its own management, and the PDC had its own management, and as the co-op withdrew from its corner stores and its liquor store and sold those off, they in fact got to a point where they didn't need me. I mean, they had a PDC manager, they had a plaza manager. And long before we fell into the difficulty, or the co-op fell into the difficulty that it did, I actually became superfluous to their needs. And so I moved on, and many others did. And it was a great, enormous regret and a real blow to hear that the society had finally buckled under that interest pressure.
Would more shareholder support have saved you? Not you personally, save the store.
I don't think so. I think we went through an inevitable cycle of change. Palmerston North was big enough and is big enough and has now proved to be big enough to support what is there.
Yeah.
And what is there now is actually even bigger than we had. And I think probably it's even better, because if you're talking about the shopper, and the shopper is everybody, then Kmart and the plaza shops are just fantastic. And I think that the co-op can take some vicarious credit for at least challenging the retailers of Palmerston North, and challenging the lenders and the city fathers, and saying, well, we believe in what we're doing. History will say that we failed. But all alongside that is the fact that Palmerston North now has a shopping structure that's at least as good as anything in New Zealand. And you can go to Porirua and look at their Kmart Food Town complex, and you can go to just one or two of the big shopping centres like Manukau City out of Auckland. Is certainly no better than we've got here. And I think that the Palmerston North shopper may not remember the co-op, they don't have to, but it is, as I said, to use the word again, vicariously a living monument to what we did. And no one will shake my view of that because I'm biased, but I just think that you drive past there now and you see at 10 o'clock this morning, in about 15 minutes, that car park will be nearly full on a Sunday morning. And that is part of Palmerston North's lifestyle. And no regrets now. And the people that were there that remembered the cooperative in its heyday, I can remember one year we actually made a net profit of $2 million, they don't feel any regrets either. We did what we had to do, and we got caught up by the turn of events. And even Gordon Brown, before he died, said to me once, we are becoming an anachronism. You can't pay two dividends. You can't pay a rebate and pay interest on the money as well. You have to have, and he, the old cooperator, was starting to recognise that that most commercial structures are built around share capital to which there is no commitment for dividend. And that's a technical term, technical talk, I know, but companies invite people to give them money in the terms of shares, and they say, if we do well, we will pay you a dividend. The cooperative did it the other way.
We will pay you a dividend,
and then we'll see if we can do well.
Very 1930s.
Well, it was. I've been to the home of the cooperative movement in Rochdale, which is just...
The home of the cooperative,
which is in Rochdale, in the Midlands in England. And they started out, the founding fathers of that, started out to own their own store to defeat unscrupulous shop owners. In those days, they used to perhaps put sand in the flour and all those awful things to spin out their profits. And the cooperative found, were of the view that the shopper was being victimised. And the movement just grew like mad. And it came over to New Zealand. When English people came to New Zealand, they brought the cooperative ideal with them.
When you arrived, what sort of things did the PDC sell, and how did that change?
Well, it was a good quality, standard type provincial department store. We had a reasonably new extension which faced onto Fitzherbert Avenue, where we sold sports goods, and we had an old furniture shop which we'd bought alongside the old PDC, which was our furniture department, and it had had some pretty old-fashioned departments, and had a grocery and a butchery at the back. So in its own way, in 1972, it was a one-stop shop. And over the period of time I was there, we upgraded the furniture floor. We upgraded the fashion floor. It was beautiful. We bought in the latest cladding material and signage, multicolour signage. We did up our cosmetic counter, and we always kept doing one department after another.
I've heard about Gordon's red wall in the shop.
Yes, I didn't really drop onto that. I didn't sort of particularly notice that aspect of the shop. He had his very strong opinions, of course, and I don't know where he got them from, because he really wasn't a shopkeeper anyway. But he had strong opinions about most things, and but he'd not influenced that much. When by the time I came, to be honest, he was ready to leave, and he didn't carry on any influence of trying to subvert the design of the shop. Les Goodwin, as PDC manager, had a particular flair for design and presentation, and I never interfered with that. I only sort of kept my hands on the financial reins, and I did leave it to Les and his consultants to design the shop and to continue to try and present it in a different way as years go on. I mean, you know yourself that, for instance, in the hotel industry, they say you must completely renovate after 8 years. The public won't last that long if you don't continue. And so we moved around the departments of the PDC to continue to upgrade and to bring them up to modern shopping presentation. And of course, when the plaza came along and it was going to be new, we realised that we needed to do something to keep the PDC from looking like an ugly duckling, to keep it from being unfairly compared with the presentation of the new shops. I suppose, personally, I thought we overdid it. I think we went too far with our redesign. We tried to turn the department store into a series of boutiques. Departmentalised boutiques. And I think we lost the flavour of the broad sweep of a department store. Like you walk into some of these huge department stores overseas and you can still see the whole floor. And we lost that vista. And I'm being very smart now because, of course, it's all hindsight. But I think we should have preserved the vastness of the department store and let the plaza shops stand on their own feet, as it were. But it was still a very nice place to shop, and it's now gone, and which is a pity. But what's there now is just as good or better.
Okay, how did the board change?
I think the board got, certainly I don't think, I know the board got younger over the period that I was there. We also had an increase of one in the number of women on the board. All of board members made a huge personal commitment. I mean, they got a very small fee for what they did. And particularly in the years of planning for the plaza, the number of board meetings was mind-boggling.
What, weekly? Or?
I think we used to meet quite often in a small subcommittees at lunchtime. We had one formal monthly board meeting, but mostly toward the end of 85, through 85, 86, and maybe late 84, we probably were meeting about once a fortnight. And that made a huge commitment on the part of the directors. And they were always, though, I think, still, no matter who they were, what the constituency of the board was, I do believe they were people that believed in the cooperative. Mm. They didn't have any secret agenda.
Mm. You never had trouble getting board members?
Don't remember that we did. Always seemed to be someone prepared to be nominated, and quite often there was a contest, three or four would be contesting perhaps one vacancy, which was a healthy thing. So I think we were well served, really. There were many in the commercial environment of Palmerston North who used to be a little critical of, you've got a lay person board. But much of that came from some sense of jealousy of how good the cooperative was. And I didn't ever brook any criticism of the board of directors. They were people who honestly believed in the cooperative and who were doing their best, and you can't ask for any more than that.
No.
I think that the women on the board, particularly toward the end of my term there, had a real concern for our employees. They related well with them, and they did play a very major role in helping us to put together what we thought was going to be a great shining empire. It was a tremendous team spirit that we had in the co-op and PDC.
Mm-hmm.
It was just amazing how close we got to each other, because we all thought we were on a crusade, I suppose.
Yes.
And we had rugby teams and we had cricket games and we had tremendous social functions. We all, although there was, I think at one stage, over 200 employees, we all knew one another's families. It was a wonderful, and it still lingers, that closeness.
Yes.
Yeah.
I saw that reunion yesterday. People knew people. There wasn't a lot of peering at name tags.
No, that's right. And we just had a lot of fun with what we did. Going to work was hard work, and it's no job is without its boring aspects, I suppose. But we all were interested in each other, and I like to think that while I was there, we did have this esprit de corps, which meant we were all doing something to maximise for the common interest of Palmerston North. A competitive shopping opportunity. That's really what it came down to.
Mm-hmm.
And we were thrilled to see the number of people, number of housewives walking into our shops with prams, and the way they kept their rebate coupons in those days, and we all felt a sense of pride, I think, which has never been lost in what we did. The failure of the society was a huge blow to everyone and deeply felt. We've become more resigned to it now. And the lasting thing, of course, has been the fact that we haven't accepted defeat. We look back and say, well, what we did with the best of intentions and our best efforts. And if they weren't as good as the opposition, well, it doesn't matter. We still tried. You know, it's like perhaps losing a rugby game but still playing your best.